This is the Hollywood Outsider weekly movie and TV podcast with a new episode every Thursday. And this week we're doing a little shorter episode followed by some of our favorite topics from the show. I'll explain that in a minute, but we're going to look at upcoming releases, including Pacific Rim and Grown Ups 2. We have spoiler-free reviews of The Lone Ranger and The Heat. Our From the Outside In topic this week, in honor of The Lone Ranger, we're going to talk about Westerns, which we don't really do that much. And at the very end of the show, we're going to have some of our favorite topics from the year as we count down to our 100th episode. Next week, we're going to have our big 100th episode with the whole gang, and we're going to go down some of our listener sent-in favorite bits and moments and whatnot. So look forward to that. This is going to be a shorter episode, followed by some clips. So my name is Aaron Peterson, and with me today are my fellow ho, Brian Williams.
Yeah, this is the Crystal Light version.
The Hollywood Outsider. Justin has some family issues, and Scott is doing whatever Scott does. So they will not be here for this episode, so this will just be me and Brian. What's up, man?
Not much, man. You doing all right tonight?
I think it's great. We can pretty much talk and talk and talk, and nobody interrupts. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. So, hey, just, you know, just hit the record button and just roll on.
All right, shut the fuck up. That's enough of you.
All right. I'm done for, like, the next 20 minutes. Go on. Go on.
Like I said, it's funny
just
how...
Just tell me when the trailer part comes up. I'll start up then.
It's funny how much less Brian pauses when there's not so many people on the show. So... I think
there may be a correlation between the two. I don't know.
This is a buffer to our episode 100 next week. So we're still going to review a couple movies and we're going to throw in a topic and whatnot. But next week, the listener favorites you guys have been sending in, we're going to play those next week. If we're still taking emails until July 11th. So if you have a moment from the show that you want to hear again, just send it to us, and we'll try to get it in there. And or if you just want to say some nice or angry thoughts, feel free to do that too. Feedback at thehollywoodoutsider.com. We'll draw three names from everybody that emails us and give away a T-shirt. So,
woohoo!
Let's go to the news. Stan Lee is running around confirming movies left and right without getting the okay to actually confirm them from Marvel. Doctor Strange, we already knew about, but now he says they've actually okayed a Silver Surfer and a Black Panther movie. Do you want either one of those? And do you think he's just senile?
Look, the dude's 90 years old. Who knows what he's really involved in at this point? The stuff that I've been reading, it doesn't sound like a Silver Surfer movie is officially greenlit. He does say that, you know, there's really no way they won't do a Silver Surfer movie. Now, I don't know who they is because Fox owns the rights to Silver Surfer with the Fantastic Four, a couple other franchises. You know, and of course, the other companies own the other rights. So I don't know about that one, but Black Panther has been a favorite for a while. Him, I don't know what the big, I mean.
Do you want to see a Black Panther movie? Of those two, I'd rather see Black Panther, but I don't really know if I want either.
See, I would rather, I've always loved the Silver Surfer.
Have you?
Yeah. I don't have a good reason for it. I've just thought, but I've always loved.
Because he glistens. He glistens when he glides.
Kind of like me, you know, and I do shave my head, so I've got that chrome dome thing, that connection going with him. So I don't know. And plus, I've just always loved the character. I've always liked the fact that he was a herald to Galactus, this big bad planet eater guy, basically just to save his planet. And, you know, he's a good guy doing bad things because he kind of felt like he was compelled, you know, he had to. So Black Panther is just a cool guy from Africa, but he's got some pretty bad skills and stuff. And he's kind of like, he's like Captain America from a different continent in a way.
Well, we'll see what happens. Some part of me thinks Stan Lee's just losing his damn mind. And he knows he doesn't have much time left in this world. So he's just trying to talk about all the Marvel properties he can before he's done.
What are you going to do? Kill me? It's bound to happen sooner or later anyway.
Yeah. Well, everybody thinks that he's deep in the Marvel universe and he's...
No.
Like in the actual executive universe, and he's not. He's an executive producer on all the movies just because he was part of the comics, but it's more of an honorary title.
Right.
So, also, Jacob's Ladder, if you remember this, that's a movie starring Mr. Susan Sarandon, Tim Robbins, back in, I think it was late 80s, early 90s, whatever it was.
I think the ex Mr. Susan Sarandon.
Yeah, but you know what I'm saying. I mean, that's really how he's known. He might have an Oscar, but really you're known because your wife is pretty hot.
This is true.
Or girlfriend. So they're talking about remaking this. Now, if you ever saw the movie, it's a really messed up movie, and it will play with your head a little bit. But is that something you want to see again?
Not really. I don't know. It was one of those movies that, I kind of had to watch a couple of times to really get back then. but didn't we already have this? I mean, they're talking about redoing it, kind of updating it in a more current thing, possibly a a Gulf War type setting instead of Vietnam ex-Vietnam vet. But I mean, we had Hurt Locker. That's not really.
Well, I mean, the ending's a little different.
A little bit. I mean, hey, but you got a war vet struggling with PTSD. So, that's of course, true. This guy was. It does fall outside the statute of limitations. Can we reveal the ending?
Well, not. I would say no because they're going to remake it. So right. Let's not ruin it for people. Just in
so
case
it is. It is slightly different. But
there's all kinds of rules now, Brian. I can't keep up with them all.
I know. We got to write this shit down.
We do.
I don't know. It's. We've got enough movies about like war veterans who are struggling with mental issues. This one does go a different direction, but it does fall in that same under that same umbrella, so to speak. So, it's a good enough movie by itself. I think it would still hold up. I haven't watched it in years, but I believe it should still hold up now. What would you think?
I think it probably would hold up, but it's. Once you know the ending, you never want to watch it again, really.
Right.
I didn't really. It's not one of those where once you get the ending, you're like, oh, I got to go back and see all the clues. Once I knew how it ended, I'm like, okay, got it. Clever. Yeah. And then I was done.
Now I need to watch some cartoons to bring a little bit more levity into my life.
Yeah, because it's one of the most depressing movies you'll ever watch. So it's not fun. I'd rather watch Platoon with ice cream.
Schindler's List. Was it like a musical compared to this?
It was. Schindler's List was like a birthday party compared to Jacob's Ladder. One more piece of news and then we'll move on. There's a Ultimate Collector's Edition of the Dark Knight Trilogy coming out on September 24th on Blu-ray. I bought the trilogy last Christmas, but apparently this is the super-duper special version where it's got six discs and includes a new retrospective and a sit-down, which this is the coolest part, I think. With Christopher Nolan and Richard Donner, who both talk about how they bring a superhero to life. That's pretty freaking cool.
That is pretty freaking cool. But the one thing that's got me sold is the fact that it comes with Hot Wheels.
It does? I didn't see it comes with toy cars.
It comes with three fucking Hot Wheel cars. The Batmobile, the Tumbler, and the Batpod.
Get out.
All for $99.95.
Oh, what a bargain. Yeah.
I am all over this.
What a bargain. Is it really? It is $99. I'm hoping Amazon will have it for like 50.
Yeah, I better get more than 5 minutes of talking with Christopher Nolan. Sorry. Yeah.
And Richard Donner. I mean, I'm actually more interested in Richard Donner because Christopher Nolan, he's already talked plenty. I got it. Richard Donner, I want to hear his stories, how Superman 2 was destroyed. That looks fun. On a PS note, Christian Bale has confirmed officially he will not do another Batman. So
it's official.
Thankfully, people can stop wondering if he's going to be in Justice League. He won't. He's moved on to being angry at, PA assistants left and right. So,
welcome to Brian's Trailer Park. All right. What does a person do once they've successfully broken out of a maximum security prison? Why take a job as a breakout specialist with a company who's going to put you in the most futuristically industrial and totally impossible to break out of prison. Make some fucking sense to me. Sly Stallone plays Ray Breslin, who's a con that can't be held by the walls of most prisons. He's hired to, quote unquote, consult a firm on their prison and see if it's able to be broken out of. Apparently, Michael Scofield wasn't available for the job.
That's exactly what I kept thinking. I'm like, where's the prison break theme song? This whole trailer.
Right. He's dead, so he wasn't available. he teams up with the grandpa of C Block, played by Arnie Schwarzenegger, who helps him get out. And, it looks like a fairly basic plot here, but it does kind of appear to be a fresh take on the whole prison escape genre, so to speak. What do you think about it?
I think it looks like Lock Up 2013. That's what I think. People that know what Lock Up is, I'm sorry.
Right.
I think Sly's probably still sorry, too. I love the Arnold goatee he's got going on in this thing, where he's trying to kind of look hip.
Yep.
A little sexy. He's trying to sex it up a little bit.
Hey, And we've got two things that we haven't seen in literally decades.
What?
That's Arnie with a machine gun and a helicopter.
This is true. Yeah, this is true. But it is very much, I mean, it's almost verbatim the Prison Break plotline from the TV series Prison Break. If he has like a brother in the in C Block, it's just going to throw everything off. Like, oh.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's that would be a bummer.
It looks like something I would probably go see because I have no shame.
I'll probably go see it also. The fancy prison looks really cool.
It looks really cool, but it looks a little too cool. Yeah. It looks like the nicest prison you're ever going to be stuck in.
You know what I kept thinking of was The Cube.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, good call. Good call.
And I kind of kept thinking of that and V for Vendetta with the guards with the face, you know, the expressionless masks. That mm-hmm. was kind of odd.
I definitely look forward to seeing if they bring anything new to the table. Since Stallone, you already did this movie in the 80s. Seriously.
He's 65 or 66, and, you know, all old-timers could be setting in. He might not remember doing it.
He forgot. He goes to the premiere and they show him like Lock Up instead. He's like, hey, I look pretty good. You know, hey.
I look pretty good. His face is working out for me. All right, man. Escape Plan opens on October 18th, later this year. Now, if you're in prison and listening to this somehow on some contraband device, we want to hear from you. So you've got a lot of ways to reach us. You can call us, probably not text us, but you can call us at 818-814-6246, or if you like letters better than numbers, 818-I'm-a-ho. I-M-A-H-O.
818-81-I'm-a-ho.
There you go.
You always forget the area code.
Whatever. Details. Our email is feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. You can go on to facebook.com/thehollywoodoutsider. Tweet us at @H_outsider. We always love the tweets. And if you can still get your official I'm a Ho t-shirts at thehollywoodoutsider.com.
Excelente. Now let's go to the big screen. We've got two new releases that are out. We're going to review. The first one, The Lone Ranger. I want to preface this review with, I am a huge Lone Ranger fan. I know there's probably not many of them around anymore, but that is the one. And Brian, you can probably attest to this. We both grew up kind of, not grown up because we were way past when the series came on. But I grew up watching the series with my grandpa. So right. To me, just when you hear the William Tell Overture, which if anybody knows it, you'll know it when you see the movie, or if you've heard music in your lifetime, you've heard the theme song. Whenever that comes on, I mean, I just smile giddy like a little kid because I love that show, and you know, it basically reminds me of childhood, blah, blah, blah.
All right. On your love scale, where does it rank in relation to Hitchcock?
Ooh, it's probably a good 8 just because it's very, very close to me and my grandpa.
It's up there.
Yeah, very much.
I just want to kind of.
It's up there. It's not quite Hitchcock. Hitchcock is definitely 10, but this is pretty close. It's pretty close. So when I found out they were remaking it, I was a little skeptical. And then I found out that they're going the Tonto approach, which is making Tonto a focal point, which I thought that was really interesting. You know, hey, if you're trying a different direction with it, I'm all open to it. Then I found out Johnny Depp was going to be doing his Pirates of the Caribbean thing. I got a little hesitant. So, and if you listen to, I think it was last week's show or the week before when we talked about it, it's the one movie where nobody has really mentioned it so far this year. Nobody's really talked about it. And when you do hear him talk about it, it's not good. Reviews haven't been that great. So I didn't go into it thinking much of it. But we'll get to that. What Lone Ranger is about is Tonto recounts the story of how he and John Reed paired up to become the Lone Ranger in Tonto. John Reed is a fresh out of law school kid, really, young man. He rides out to be with his brother Dan and to bring an outlaw, Butch Cavendish, which is played by William Fichtner, to justice. So what they do is they send this posse. It's 8 rangers. They go out on a posse trying to find Butch. All the rangers are gunned down except for John. John survives. So he has this quest for justice. He's a very honest man, decent man. He doesn't want vengeance. He wants justice. He wants to bring Butch to justice and see him hung for his crimes. So it's not one of those, I'm going to go out and seek vengeance. Where on the other hand, Tonto, he wants him dead. Tonto don't like kimosabi. But he finds Reed in the desert, saves him because he believes him to be a spirit walker or someone that can that the Indian spirits have chosen to avenge whatever. So he saves him, and then we follow these two as they try to bring Butch to justice as well as to go up against the railroad, which is, you know, has to happen in every single Western anymore, and stop progress in the face of Cole, who's played by Tom Wilkinson. And then the movie culminates in not one but two major train chases. So that's basically the movie in a nutshell. Any questions about that, Brian? You kind of get the gist of it?
Let me ask you this. I've got a general idea of what the plot is from the trailer. Mm-hmm. Is it, would you say that they reveal too much in the trailer, or is it one of those where you see quite a bit, but really we're not showing you? Like World War Z, I thought did a fair job of this. You see quite a bit of some of the highlights of the movie, but really you didn't see much about the last probably third to half of that movie.
I think a lot of the action stuff that you saw in the trailer happens in the beginning, and a lot of the stuff that happens at the end you haven't seen because it's not in the trailer so much. But the one thing I will say is it is extremely predictable. You can watch 5 minutes going in, or about 10 minutes going in, you can kind of figure out where it's going to end up. You know, it's one of those. There's nothing real new here outside of the performances.
It's an expanded, prettier version of the TV show.
Yeah, really. I mean, essentially, and Tonto has an expanded role, where Tonto was very much a secondary character in the show. He's very up at the forefront in this one. But I will say Johnny Depp never overshadows John or the Lone Ranger in this one.
Really?
Yeah, it's like the co-lead. And you would think, I think a lot of people think that's going to be the case. I didn't find it that way. I thought they were very much equal partners in it. I mean, you find yourself watching Johnny Depp more just because his character is far more interesting than Mr. Honest, Decent Lawman, or guy trying to be Honest, Decent Lawman.
Right.
But I thought Armie Hammer, he was very good as the Lone Ranger. I actually think if they would have let him be more serious, because they kind of, he kind of, the first half of the movie, he's kind of fumbling. He's not really an action hero and whatnot. I mean, he's kind of trying
to find himself.
Yes, it's very much an origin story. So you're really not with him a lot of the time where you're like, oh, this guy's a Lone Ranger? Because you're wondering, is he ever going to be that guy? And then while you've got Tonto, he has a lot of dark turns, but mostly he's just like Jack Sparrow and, you know, the West. It's really all he's doing. There's nothing.
Indian feathers versus like pirate.
Oh, yeah. It's very, very, very similar. And this Lone Ranger has a thing for his dead brother's wife, which is kind of a little weird. But hey, whatever. Tom Wilkinson's fine in his role. You'll figure out exactly what his place is, you know, pretty early. William Fichtner is great as Butch. I really like him as an actor. He's a great character actor. And ironically, you know, he was in Prison Break. So not to have too many callbacks to Prison Break this week, but as well as he was in The Dark Knight. I mean, he's been in a lot of stuff, tons of stuff. He's a strong and an absolutely vicious villain. Like, I thought this was like a family flick, but there's a scene where he cuts somebody's heart out. Literally, cuts somebody's heart out.
Well, it's
pretty fucked up.
The Indiana Jones movies were quote-unquote family movies, and they had a guy who stuck his hand through somebody's chest and pulled out their heart. So
it was pretty close to that kind of viciousness, man. I was actually very surprised that they put that in there. Helena Bonham Carter pops up as a prostitute with a artificial leg. They could have cut her entire role out of the movie, and we'd be fine. Honestly, her role was completely unnecessary and probably the one thing that makes the movie seem a little too long.
I'm convinced Johnny Depp actually has something in his contract that says she has to appear in every movie that he makes.
I think so, too. Like, it's been a while since I've seen a movie where a character was so oblivious, where you just don't need her.
I could understand Tim Burton, you know, because he's married to her.
Mm-hmm. But Gore Verbinski, I mean, obviously, he's doing favors.
Right.
Yeah, so it is what it is. And also Barry Pepper pops up as a leader of the Confederate Army or whatever.
Love Barry Pepper.
Yeah, he's very good in his role, but he's good in everything. And the guy doesn't want to be himself in any movie. It seems like every movie he just wants to look like somebody weirder.
Mm-hmm.
So more power to him. Gore Verbinski directed this. He also did the Pirates movies, the first three movies. I think he does a very good job, but this feels very much like Pirates of the West. Or what did you call it, Brian? Pirates of the Caribbean, Western Promises?
Right.
you freaking nailed it. It's exactly what the movie is. But like everything else this summer, 20 minutes, if they cut 20 minutes out of it, which I think all of Bonham Carter's part, if they cut all of her out, this would be a great movie. It would be exactly what I wanted. Because I will tell you, while I'm watching it, the beginning, there's a lot of action. The middle, you know, it's got a little lull here and there because they're doing the story and whatnot. But the last third of the movie, I absolutely loved, like almost peed myself with excitement, because you don't hear the William Tell overture at all throughout the movie. You hear like a real short clip of it at the beginning, and then you kind of get near the end and you're like, well, I guess they're not going to play it. I guess they're getting away from it because it's a modern retelling or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then it kicks in for the end section, which is a good half hour, 20 minutes, whatever it ends up being. And that theme runs concurrent through that entire end scene. I mean, literally from start to finish, I smiled like a little, like I was 10 years old again. So,
oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. That to me, I absolutely love that. And it's one of those things where seriously, if I hear that music, I just start smiling. So
absolutely. Yeah. I know I grew up watching it, at my great grandmother's house. And I could, and like I say, when I hear that music and I see the, you know, I see that black and white image of the Lone Ranger and stuff, you know, riding on the horse and everything, it takes me back and is just, like I say, it just puts a big smile on my face too. I totally understand where you're coming from with that.
Well, verdict, if $10 is the full price of admission, screw the critics. I'm giving it a 7. I realize that it's a little too long. It's not deep. There's nothing new. It's not very original. But I liked it for what it was, and I really love the ending. I mean, the ending was enough to push it up for me. It was probably like 6, 6.5 for me until that last half hour, and I was like, oh, fuck yes. I could watch this 100 times. So, 7 out of 10.
Yeah, it is getting a lot of heat from the critics and everything. But speaking of heat.
Speaking of heat, segue master. I also saw The Heat, and I'll be quicker with this review, but Sandra Bullock is FBI agent Ashburn, who heads to Boston to take down a drug cartel. She teams up with Melissa McCarthy as Mullins, a local Boston cop. And I want to stress, she has zero, I repeat, zero Boston accent. None. And they team up to bring down the cartel. I stress that because her family ends up being important to the plot of the movie, like her entire family. And they all have extremely strong Boston accents. Meanwhile, she sounds just like Melissa McCarthy. It's pretty funny. Look,
Hansel and Gretel, you had a brother and sister who were German. She's got a British accent. He's got an American accent. There are certain times where accents just don't give a shit.
They didn't matter here. But she plays a tough cop actually really well. I was surprised. You've seen this movie 100 times. And what it boils down to this. Do these two, Sandra Bullock and Melissa McCarthy, do they work as partners? If they don't, the movie's going to suck. If they do, the movie's going to be good, or it's a good chance to be great. Depends. I say hell yes. I think these two deal with all types of cop cliches, and they even throw in a little sexism for good measure. And more times than not, hit it out of the park. Sandra Bullock is not somebody that I really like. Now, Brian, are you a fan of either one of them?
Sandra Bullock. She's one of those. I love her in The Proposal. I thought that was where she kind of, it was one of those redeeming movies. I thought before that she kind of dipped down, and I just really didn't care too much for her after, you know, but with The Proposal with Ryan Reynolds, I love her in that movie. So she's kind of back up on the, you know, the upper edge mm-hmm. now. So I do like her. Melissa McCarthy. I'm in the same boat as where you've been for a while. And that's, you know, I want to see her branch out. Mm-hmm. She's got the, you know, the fat girl humor nailed down. All right. She's proven that she can, she's a good actress. She's not just a one trick pony. And mm-hmm. let's branch out a little bit, see what else she can do. I don't want her to get pigeonholed into that role.
Absolutely. And this one, she does not do, like, there's no fat jokes and that sort of thing. It's real. It's just cop jokes. Which mm-hmm. I respect. Bullock, I like her, but I could take her or leave her. I really don't care. McCarthy's a star, and I think everybody that watches the movie knows that. She just knows how to take any joke and just go for it, which is why people love her. Because she has no shame, and she will just go for it. And really never resorts to the easy joke. And like Brian's saying, every time I've seen her in anything, and that includes Identity Thief, which I didn't think was a very good movie, but she was good in it. And Bridesmaids, which obviously she was the star of Bridesmaids. I don't care who the stars actually were.
Yep.
When she gets a little moment where she gets emotional and you see that little glimpse, like this movie has a moment where she's being recognized and whatnot. And it's near the end of the movie. I don't want to spoil it for anybody. But she has this little moment where just the look in her eye, I can see that she is a really good actress. And I really wish she would just take something just heavily dramatic and just show everybody what she's really could do. Mm-hmm. I totally can see it. Bridesmaids director Paul Weig, he knows how to go for even tacky jokes, but I still laugh my ass off, even if you know every single plot point to this movie 5 minutes in. I could watch this a few times over. I laugh my ass off. So 7.50 out of 10.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. All right. Before we go to what movies are coming out, what's this movie from last week? It was A Night at the Roxbury. Stephen Feldman, you got it right. 2 for 2. I think you're the only one. If anybody else got it right, I didn't get the email.
That was a tough one.
That was really tough.
I mean, I've seen that movie a number of times, and while it was familiar, it didn't come to me. So, well, yeah, good on Stephen.
Yeah, we gave Scott a chance to redeem himself from that really hard one he had a few weeks ago, and I guess we're gonna have to start picking him for him. Now let's go to upcoming attractions. This is where Justin would normally explain what's coming out, but I guess we're going to do it.
Oh, yeah. First up is VHS 2, and I'll be honest with you, it's been a few weeks. It's been, what, 2 weeks? I don't remember exactly what episode it was. I didn't even look it up.
That's how much you could give a shit about this.
I'm trying to forget this movie, but like a case of herpes, it just keeps coming back. It's the follow-up to the somewhat hit VHS. It's called VHS 2, but it's also called SVHS for like Super VHS.
Oh, they have a beta? Would that be like part 3? Beta
oh
Max?
Oh, God. I don't care. It will not be watched by this guy. I can tell you
that's
that.
That's awesome.
General gist of this is you got this couple is they're investigating a missing person. It leads them to a house where, of course, they stumble across a TV that's left on with a bunch of VHS tapes, and to find clues for this murder or this kidnapping, missing person, they've got to watch these tapes. So, and that's how they work in the three or four, actually, I think it's four different stories this time around, as opposed to, I don't know, it was like 6 or 7 last time, I believe. It was quite a bit. Mm. Not as long as the first one. Not as entertaining as the first one either. So I gave it a 2.
Yeah.
And the fact that somebody had written in, I forgot the name.
I believe it was Brad P, and he gave it a 4.
Yeah. And he even had a lot of good stuff to say about it, and he still gave it a 4.
So that's so even if it seems like there's something good to be had, there's really not.
There's not. Mm-mm. No. So,
and this comes out July 12th, by the way.
Yeah, don't waste your time on it.
Grown Ups 2 also comes out, and that is reuniting Adam Sandler, Kevin James, Chris Rock, and David Spade. What happened to Rob Schneider? Wasn't he in the first one? Did they just kick him out?
I thought I saw him in this trailer, too.
I didn't see him, and he's not in the poster or any of the ad material, so weird. Maybe they had a falling out. I guess he had too much talent for Grown Ups 2. That's what I'm thinking.
Ran out of hot daughters. I don't know.
After moving his family back to his hometown to be with his friends and their kids, Lenny, played by Adam Sandler, finds out that between old bullies, new bullies, schizo bus drivers, drunk cops on skis, and 400 costume party crashers, sometimes crazy just follows you. There's really nothing new in here. I mean, if you saw Grown Ups, you probably have already seen Grown Ups too. But these movies, like... The movie is tracking better than the last movie we were going to talk about, Pacific Rim. So is it something you want to see, Brian, at all? Do you want to go back to Grown-Upsville?
You know, I'm probably one of the few people that actually kind of enjoyed it.
I liked it.
So it was one of those movies that I went in with really low expectations and was pleasantly surprised. So in a way, I do want to see it. It had some good humor. There's some SNL alumni. They're bringing in all kinds of people. Andy Samberg, of course, his buddies from the Lonely Island, Jorma and Akiva. Mm-hmm. I forget their last names or whatever. Like Taron Killam or Killam. Oh, few, and you know, he's still on SNL. A handful of others and stuff. Of
course, Taylor Lautner's in there, ladies. That's right.
Mm. Yeah, Taylor Lautner. That's true. That's true. So even Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Oh, well, it's a classic then.
Oh, my God. Oh, love me some Stone Cold. Anyway, it's not one that I don't think I'm going to rush to the theater to see, but it is one that I will check out on, you know, on cable or Netflix.
Yeah, I'm ashamed to admit it, but I kind of want to see it. I really like the first one. Adam Sandler movies are kind of the dumb, easy movie. You know you're going to have a decent time. You kind of know what you can expect. Chris Rock is my favorite comedian working today. So even though I don't like him as an actor, I'll always check out anything he does. So I'll see it.
You know, and you're right. What's his?
Rob Schneider?
Yeah. He's not listed on
I told you.
I could have sworn I seen him in the trailer, but
I haven't seen him. If anybody knows what happened to him, I'm dying to find this story. I have Googled the shit out of Rob Schneider, and I can't find anything, really anything, because he's really not relevant, even on Google. But what happened? I want to know what happened to him. Why isn't he in this movie?
Wow, that is... He's not even listed under the rest of cast listed alphabetically. That's... So...
And you know he wasn't too busy. Like, it wasn't a scheduling conflict.
Oh, my gosh.
He's probably still at home screaming, I'm free. I can do it. I can still film something.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I want to say I hope everything's all right, but.
You don't really care, ultimately.
I really don't.
All right, what about our last movie? This is the one, Justin, I can't really imitate Justin Squee, but he would if you were here. So tell us about Pacific Rim.
Yeah, you know, you've seen the numerous different trailers. You cheered when you seen the kaiju. Your mouth dropped open at the size of the monsters. Now it's finally here. Pacific Rim is here. Aaron, just how pumped are you to kind of see these giant Voltron-looking robots swing a cargo ship at a giant lizard in downtown wherever? Tokyo, I'm assuming. But
I think it's all over the world.
I mean, I think it's San Francisco, Tokyo. I mean, they're all over the damn place. But
well, and apparently what it is alien. These are aliens, I guess. I didn't know what they were. They're just giant monsters. I figured it was like Godzilla's cousins came over because they were pissed and decided to wipe us out. But they're aliens.
Yeah, there's like some sort of like wormhole or something at the bottom of the ocean that they come out of.
Mm-hmm. And we have to build these giant robots to fight giant monsters. That's the whole movie. And it's Guillermo del Toro. Did I say it right this time?
Guillermo, you don't have to do an accent when you say somebody's foreign name.
Kind of do.
You
know,
you can just say the name and that would work just fine. But Guillermo del Toro.
All right. Well, that guy, he directed it. He does wonderful work with special effects in these kind of movies. I'm very interested to see what he does because really it's a pretty basic plot. I mean, there's nothing real creative here. The only thing cool about it is you got Charlie Hunnam from Sons of Anarchy, his first real major leading role. So if this movie flops, it's a huge flop. His career in movies is done. Idris Elba's in it, like him. Charlie Day's in it. There's a lot of good actors in it, but it's really all about, you know, monsters beating the shit out of other monsters. Robots beating the shit out of monsters. I want to see it. I don't know why. I'm kind of ashamed because it's very much like the 12-year-old in me.
Yeah, I mean, it's really... just about a whole bunch of pretty pictures on this is why you go to the theater to see movies.
I might actually see it in 3D.
I think I'll probably do the 3D for this one. The opportunity for some great scenes in 3D is looks like there's going to be a lot of those. So mm-hmm. This is one of mine that I'm one of my more anticipated, you know, flicks of the year. So I'm really looking forward to it.
So out of the three, including the one that you had to suffer through already, VHS 2, Grown Ups 2, and Pacific Rim, which came out July 12th, what do you want to see the most?
Really, you know, the thing that I think I missed the most with VHS 2 was the fact that I didn't see it on a large enough screen. So I think I'm going to pick that one.
That's what you were missing.
That's what it was. I think if I had seen it on a giant screen, that would have made it a whole lot better.
I'm going to
actually just get Pacific Rim, of course.
I hope so. And I will be picking Pacific Rim 2. I will be seeing Grown Ups 2 in the theater, I'm sure. But Pacific Rim is one you have to see at a big screen. If you're going to see a movie that weekend, come on.
And I think, honestly, we can probably go out on a limb here and speak for our colleagues, Justin and Scott, and say that they would probably pick Pacific Rim also.
I know. I definitely know Justin would. Scott's always a wild card, man. You just never know. But I think he would. Fellow consensus, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You can listen and subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher Radio app. Give us a thumbs up if you do, or through our RSS feed at thehollywoodoutsider.com. There is a new episode every Thursday. And like we promised, this is going to be a shorter episode, so we're going right to From the Outside In. Our topic this week, Westerns. With The Lone Ranger hitting theaters, we thought we'd talk about a topic that's kind of been dormant for a while, actually. And that's Westerns. For decades, this was the genre where men were men, women wanted to marry these men. These men just shot other random men for no reason, or good reason, whichever way you want to look at it. And then out of nowhere, the genre just died. Why?
That's a real good question. I think special effects have really had a lot to do with it.
Especially why? What makes you say that?
Well, you know, when about the time maybe the Clint Eastwood era of Westerns, you know, late 60s, 70s. We hit a major spike in the special effects industry, you know, with movies like Star Wars and stuff. These types of movies were able to kind of take us to different places that we have never had a chance to go. Now, all of a sudden, we've had decades of Westerns, 50, 60 years of Westerns that really haven't changed a whole lot. Now you're taking me to a different planet. You're taking me under the water with a giant shark. You're taking me to the jungles of South America with giant rolling balls chasing me and snakes. I don't know. It's just all of these bigger movies.
It's spectacle. Spectacle one is what you're saying.
Right. And it's kind of the whole Pacific Rim thing. It's wow. These are some pretty pictures that I haven't seen before. I want more. Now, when you go back to the West, you're like, well, it's nothing but these makeshift small one street towns, one guy standing on one end of the street and the other. I mean, we've seen that a million times. I'd rather go see Indiana Jones.
Do you miss it sometimes though? I mean, cause the one thing I will say, you know, when I was younger, I would watch those kind of movies with my grandpa where they were very kind of like the essence of man, I guess, you know, everything was all your possessions are gone cause you don't own anything. Back in the old West, you don't really have anything, and everything you do have, you had to fight for, you had to work hard for the land. I mean, it was kind of like the man's man kind of movie, where they don't really have man's man's movie anymore. I mean, I guess Stallone took over that for a while, but the man's man movie really kind of stopped with the Western.
Well, we've got to cater to a whole lot of different people now.
This is true.
I mean, we've got to include all kinds of different people now, and it's not about it's not about the man anymore. We're having, and this is a great thing, is we're having movies with stronger leading women, you know, older people of, you know, different colors and stuff. And so it's not about, you know, those, you know, the Western, I don't want to say it's dead, but it's just not as important as it used to be anymore.
And it needs to be more creatively shown. Like Django Unchained. I mean, that was taking a Western and definitely throwing it on its ear.
Absolutely. I mean, how many Westerns have, I mean, like non-blaxploitation films have a black actor as its lead? There's just not any out there.
Not many, except for like Mario Van Peebles movies in the in the 80s, if you remember
right,
those.
This is true. Early 90s.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, for it to kind of, you know, exist as we even know it, you know, it's really got to be, I think the key to it, and it doesn't matter who the lead is, male, female, whatever race, you name it, it's got to have a strong story.
Mm-hmm.
310 to Yuma was a, and True Grit, I think, are some good examples of recent ones that really kind of did just that.
Oh, and those were fantastic. Honestly, more people need to see 310 to Yuma. That was a great, great Western that wasn't really appreciated, I don't think.
Honestly, it was one that I put off for a while. And you know, over the course of whatever, video games and just chit-chat and whatever, you know, you had brought it up. I'm finally like, all right, well, I'm going to check this out. And was, you know, one of those where I was like, man, I really wish I would have watched this sooner because it is that good of a movie.
Mm-hmm. And it's just exactly like Western should be, where you're not really sure who's going to prevail. And then there's no real good guys. There's no real bad guys. Everybody's just kind of out for whatever they're out for. That was a good movie.
You know, from the, on the TV front, and it took about a season and a half really for me to kind of like this show, but Hell on Wheels on AMC
mm-hmm.
is a Western of sorts. I mean, it revolves around the railroad, and it's not exactly about the typical small frontier town that's being you know, led by some corrupt politician or some mean cattle rancher or something like that. Fill in the blank with whatever villain you want, but it does follow the railroad and is a kind of a, comes from a little bit of a different angle. So definitely, I mean, it's one, I think it's on Prime, and I think Amazon Prime and Netflix. So, I mean, check that out. I think the third season should be starting up in August.
And you liked it that much?
Yeah, I did. Especially the first season is kind of a slow starter. The second season is more intense, has a little bit more action and everything. And it's really kind of starting to, much like a train on a rail, you know, a railroad, it starts slow, but now it's starting to pick up a little bit and get some momentum. So I'm anxious to see what season three has got. Out of curiosity, what are some of your favorite Westerns? TV or movies, whatever, doesn't matter.
Well, obviously The Lone Ranger, we talked about that earlier.
Of course.
That seriously, I can still watch any episode that comes on. I just love watching that. I love the song. I love Tonto. I love The Lone Ranger. I just love it. The Rifleman, do you remember The Rifleman?
Oh, yeah.
That was one of my favorites. My grandpa and I watched that one a lot, too. Because he only watched Westerns, really. I mean, that's just the kind of movie he grew up with. I mean, John Wayne was his guy. I mean, I swear he has a velvet painting of John Wayne before he passed away. And he's very, very – you know how that was, right? From that generation had to have John Wayne.
No, quick note about John Wayne. When John Wayne was filming the Green Berets, my mom met him. She was a little girl. And he was sitting there playing a game of chess with another gentleman, and she approached him, and he signed an autographed picture for her.
Really?
Yep.
Wow. That's actually very impressive. You still have it?
Yep, sure does.
That's definitely he was a hero for a lot of people. He wasn't one of my favorites. He's a little bit too good for my liking. You know, I always liked somebody with a little edge. And the Rifleman had a lot of edge. I really liked the Rifleman. Hang 'em High is probably one of my all-time favorite Western films.
Oh, yeah.
You remember that? And that's where Clint Eastwood basically gets hung and left for dead and for whatever reason survives, and he decides to go about getting vengeance on the boys that wronged him.
Now, was that – because there's a few of those Clint Eastwood movies in that little era that they're almost – you could just stamp. I mean, they're almost all the same,
mm-hmm.
kind of like High Plains Drifter and stuff. Was that the one where they painted the town red?
No, that was that Mules of Sister Sarah or something like that?
No, it wasn't that one. It was...
It wasn't Hang 'em High, no. It wasn't Hang 'em High. Okay. I know which movie you're talking about, but...
It might have been High Plains Drifter, but...
It might have been, but that was a good movie. That was really... That's the one
where
they...
They're all about the same. He's some guy that was wronged in some way and comes back for vengeance.
Yeah, most of his movies are the same.
Yeah.
Wild Bunch is one. I freaking love the Wild Bunch. That's fucked up, evil kind of Western, but it's great. Way ahead of its time.
Well, yeah, because that was one of those, I mean, it really one of those first movies where the, or at least Westerns anyway, where it was, you had anti-heroes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the heroes of it were bad guys.
Which you didn't have at that time. Not really.
Because right. I don't know. I don't remember when it came out. It was
late 60s.
Was it late 60s?
Yeah,
I was thinking early 70s. But yeah, I mean, Sam Peckinpah was just a creative, dark son of a bitch.
Like, very dark. Because that was a movie I remember watching as a kid. And my grandpa, of course, you know, he's like, well, that's the one Western I don't really care for. Because, you know, it's not, the guy isn't noble. He isn't honest. He isn't decent. He isn't trying to do right. All these guys are sons of bitches. Not one of them you'd want to have over and leave alone with your wife or your daughter. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Just evil fucks. But they were just so cool to root for. I mean, everybody likes the odd duck, I guess.
Ernest Borgnine. I mean, what more can you say?
That's true. You made Ernest Borgnine cool. That's hard to do. That is not an easy task. Unforgiven is my all-time favorite Western. All-time favorite Western. It's basically everything I want in a Western, and it ends when you first see the movie. Most people, you know, you've seen it 100 times by now, or you've never seen it. It's one of those. You know, you've either seen it 100 times or you've never seen it.
Mm-hmm.
But Clint Eastwood is William Money, and he's just off for a bounty. Just wanted to make some money for his kids. Morgan Freeman comes along. They end up running into Gene Hackman, and you know, shit goes down bad. They never played it like a typical Clint Eastwood Western. So for most of the movie, you actually think, well, he could probably die because the way it's going, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then it wasn't until the first time you saw it, after that, you obviously know what happens, but then the first time you saw it, that last 15 minutes were, you know, exactly what you thought might happen at some point finally happens. And it's just, you're rooting for him so much because of what gets him to that point. Just the way it ended is probably one of my all-time favorite endings of a movie. Yeah, where he just walks in that room, you know, and he has little plot points throughout the movie where he's like, you know, where this young kid's asking him, you know, how do you gun people down? How do you walk in a room and gun down a bunch of people when you're only one person? He's like, I just stand there. You know, the trick is to be the calmest person in the room is basically what he's saying. And then when he walks in that room and that whole scene plays out and he's got 10 guns on him and he doesn't even waver one little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And see how that plays out. Just one of the best shot scenes I think a Western has ever had.
I would agree with you about that last little bit. For the most part, though, honestly, that's one of my most overrated Westerns.
You son of a bitch.
Sorry.
Son of a bitch. Well, we'll get to you in a minute, dickhead. And last but not least, Tombstone. I love Tombstone. It's Kurt Russell, and you made him Wyatt Earp. I mean, you basically just made a nerdgasm for me. And then you threw Val Kilmer in it, and that's back when Kilmer was cool. And he took Doc Holliday and basically stole the whole movie and got robbed of an Oscar nomination. I still think that's one of the biggest crimes in Oscar history, him not getting nominated for an Oscar for that movie.
To this day, some of his lines are still... You can drop that one or, you know, those handful of lines of his from that movie and it's still relevant and people know what you're talking about. And to have that kind of an impact on pop culture needs to be recognized in some shape, form, or fashion. I don't know if it's Oscar worthy, but I agree that that is huge.
It's iconic is mm-hmm. a good word. It's iconic. What about you? What are your favorite TV movies, whatever?
Man, you actually hit a couple of them. The Wild Bunch being one of them. The Magnificent Seven, I love just mainly because it is literally the Seven Samurai turned into an American version.
It's great too. It's absolutely great. Still is, holds up.
You know, Yul Brynner was the big headliner for that, but you know, Steve McQueen was the real star.
Mm-hmm.
Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, with the exception of the little musical interlude scene with they're riding around on a bicycle that just totally did not
totally
fit
out of
that
place.
Fucking movie.
Totally out of place.
That fault is due to the culture at the movie culture at the time in the early 70s. Every movie was doing that. So I don't blame it totally on, was it George Roy Hill, I believe, who mm-hmm. made the movie. Yeah. So that was just the cool thing at the time. So you cut that little scene out and the rest is just cinema gold.
Mm-hmm.
Newman and Redford together, I mean, really some of the best chemistry ever.
And that ending was timeless. I mean, still timeless.
Still works. Absolutely. The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance.
Jimmy Stewart.
Yeah, Jimmy Stewart, John Wayne. Stewart, a lot of people who probably even listen to this have probably never seen it. Jimmy Stewart is a senator who owes all of his success in his life to kind of being known as the guy who's the man of the title, the man who shot Liberty Valance, you know, but did he really do it?
Mm.
So the story is really great because it kind of deals with that. Sometimes the truth is really a lot more different than the perceived reality. So,
and Jimmy Stewart was so good in that movie.
He was
just one of his best performances that most people do not remember him from.
Yep. Blazing Saddles, funniest Western ever. So many quotable lines. So many just.
Excuse me while I whip this thing out.
Right. Right. So many really in this PC world, you can't even quote the lines anymore. Just ask Paula Deen.
That movie. Just, touche, sir. Touche. They could never, ever make that movie now.
There's no way.
Nope.
Oh, you already said rape the women. I like it. Anyway.
I like rape.
Young Guns. I mean, that was just a fun movie and still probably the best acting that Lou Diamond Phillips has ever done.
Mm-hmm. Although he's pretty good on Longmire. I mean, you got to watch it. But.
I have watched the first season. I watched it too late and the second season started up. I've got to get caught up on that. So
it's very much like a Western. I mean, it's a modern Western.
Yeah, it really is. It's a definitely a good show.
Now, did you like Young Guns 2? Because I think I like Young Guns 2 more than I like Young Guns 1. I hate to say it, but I do.
Young Guns 2 is almost like Lethal Weapon.
That's why I like it.
You know what I mean? It is. It's more. Young Guns 2 is more Hollywood. It's more. They're like, oh wow, we did something good here. Now we're gonna really give you some money and do it, quote unquote, right.
Mm-hmm.
At least that was the attempt. And I like it as much as the first one for different reasons. If that makes any sense at all.
No, it makes total sense. It's a different kind of movie. It's right. Much more Hollywood slick, and the first one was very much just a dirty, down and out Western.
Yeah.
And the second one was all Hollywood slick. But Christian Slater was great in that movie. Kiefer Sutherland. I mean, everybody in the movie brought their A game. William Peterson was in it, you know, from CSI.
Yeah. Right.
As Pat Garrett. And I just loved it. And plus, the Bon Jovi, I don't care how many people can make fun of me if they want. Oh, Blaze of Glory.
I will sing that song in a heartbeat.
Shot Down in a Blaze of Glory. Fantastic song. And every time you hear it, you just make, man, I wish I had a six shooter.
In that little pause, shot down. Woo! Oh my God.
Brian's doing air guitar right now.
You know what? Next week, it might not be rap. It might be Bon Jovi.
It could happen. I've sang that song more on Rock Band than I have any other song. I'm just saying. I didn't say it well, but I've sung it.
A couple more just real quick ones. Sons of Katie Elder, I've always liked. John Wayne and Dean Martin. Young Dennis Hopper. I like it. I like the movie. It's a good overall. It's a good movie. You know, the sons of Katie Elder kind of get back together to try to find out who killed their father and basically swindled their mother out of their remaining property and money and land and that kind of stuff. But really, the one reason I like it is John Wayne cracks George Kennedy over the face with an axe handle.
I remember that.
And I can honestly watch that on a loop for all day. Just sit there and watch that over and over again.
What was your last one? You said you had another one.
Yeah, Outlaw Josie Wales.
Oh, that excellent choice.
That is just that the icon. It's just the iconic Clint Eastwood Western. If you want to watch a Western and you've never seen a Western, then why are you listening to this fucking podcast, first of all? But just watch that one. Absolutely. Just watch that one, and you will get it.
Now, of all these decades and decades and decades, all these manly, unmanly, you know, Western flicks, there's been a lot of different kinds of Western heroes.
Mm-hmm.
Who is your all-time favorite? And you can just pick an actor or a character, whichever one you prefer, but who's your favorite Western hero?
I'll tell you, I'm going to pull a Justin here. So I'm going to give you my honorable mention.
That's definitely a Justin.
And that's going to be Sam Elliott.
Nice. Excellent. Okay.
Sam Elliott, just with that gruff voice and that, you know, just he's got just Western stuff oozing all off of him. He's awesome. But my main guy is Clint Eastwood. Plain and simple. I wasn't old enough to totally appreciate John Wayne. I would probably consider him second, at least, if not maybe third, but Clint Eastwood, I think, is just, for me, he's what I think of when I think of Western. I mean, Pale Rider, High Plains Drifter, Josie Wales, any of those Sergio Leone spaghetti Westerns, Hang 'em High, Two Mules for Sister Sarah, you name it. It's just, that's a Western, is that he is really what I see as, you know, me and Justin have talked about Roland from the Dark Tower.
Yes. Yeah.
Stephen King books. That's what I see. And really the closest thing to that is Timothy Oliphant. So
I would agree with that. Honorable mention. I would actually mention Gene Autry. Which he's very forgotten, especially because his movies were like really some of the first Westerns, but wonderful guy, very charismatic, just carried a movie. I liked him more than I liked John Wayne. It's nothing against John. I think John Wayne's great. He just wasn't my kind of hero. Clint Eastwood's my number one. I mean, just blows everybody else away as far as I'm just coolest, baddest man to ever strap on a six shooter. And as soon as he showed up, you knew people were going to get fucked up and dead.
Oh yeah.
You know, John Wayne walks in, you're like, well, this could end amicably, or this could end, you know, with him arresting somebody, you know, cause it's John Wayne. He's a good man. Clint Eastwood walks in and he's got his gun. You know, somebody's dying.
Right.
There's no, hey, we're going to work this out.
Right. He pushes those swinging doors into that saloon and flips back his little, whatever, Mexican parka thing, whatever it is that he wore. And you see his gun, you know, at least three people are dead.
Mm-hmm. They just don't know it yet.
Right. Right. I agree. He is, you know, he's the picture in the dictionary next to the, you know, Western. So,
and I wish I could pick his triple threat. What were the movies? Good, Bad, and the Ugly in those films.
Right.
They really just, they weren't that great for me. I had a really hard time with the Italianism.
I agree with you. I wasn't crazy about that trilogy.
No. Everybody loves it. That Wraith Ball. Those are the iconic Westerns. Not in my world, they weren't. No. They were fine. And Clint Eastwood was great. But everything else about them was just way too Italian for me.
Well, a lot of that has to do with, it's like the audio didn't line up with it. You know, there are some distracting things about
very
it.
Very much. Take you out
like,
of it.
Yeah. And each movie is like, I don't know, like 4 days long. So to watch this, sit down and watch that full trilogy is almost like watching the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
With even more walking.
Right.
Oh, we've got a couple from some of our listeners. Actually, Scott Clark chimed in. He said he had fond memories of Silverado with Kevin Klein, Kevin Costner, Danny Glover, and Jeff Goldblum. Cheesy, maybe, but hella fun. Probably the only Western Scotty's seen. Sean M. says, I loved Fistful of Dollars. I hope the Western never dies, but I think maybe their best times are behind them.
I
probably agree with him. Greg S. Western didn't die. They just expanded media. See Red Dead Redemption. Well, that's a good point. I don't know if you ever played that game, but that's very much like a Clint Eastwood Western.
No, I never played it, but I remember you and a couple other guys that were, you had some pretty good things to say about it at the time.
Mm-hmm. And Michael H. says, I think so, as in, are they dying? And he would say, well, William Money. So he says Unforgiven as well. Booyah. Hmm. So apparently you're the one that just, you didn't get it.
No, I mean, I know I am in the minority. I don't have any, you know, illusions about that.
In the words of Justin, you didn't get it. That's really what it boils
down
to.
That's what it was. That's what it was. And that is the answer to everything.
Before we get the emails, let's do Facebook real quick. For all new Facebook likes, we said we will mention them on the show. And that's facebook.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. We had a few here last week. So Lauren Rash, Peter Germany, Deborah McGuire, and Lee. It's two Lees. It's a lot of Lee.
There's not many letters there. Just
say it. No, it's Lee. Two names. And Shane Harrington, I don't remember if I said him last week. Well, thanks to all you guys for liking us on the Facebook page. We appreciate it. Remember, if you like us, we'll mention you next week. And we do have a couple of tweets and emails. A lot of the ones that we're receiving for the 100th episode, we're going to save for the 100th episode. So don't think we didn't get it. We just aren't going to read it until next week. We're saving all that for the one big show. So, Brian, we got a couple tweets. Why don't you go first?
All right. This is from Peter Germany. It says, hey, guys, a few weeks ago in 5 Degrees of Separation for Brad Pitt and Marvel, I've got another connection, Robert Redford. I've just started listening to the show, and it's a great show. I love the lack of spoilers. Yeah, one thing we definitely do try to talk as much about the movie as we can without spoiling anything, because all of us just get irate when somebody ruins something for us. So we try to have that same respect for you guys.
Try very, very hard. And sometimes, and if we do spoil it, we try to make sure it's after the show, so we don't have any spoilers during it.
Right.
So you never have to worry about it.
And real quick, as far as Robert Redford goes, technically he's right, but we haven't seen Robert Redford in the movies yet.
Because he's going to be in Captain Avenger or Captain Avenger.
Captain Avenger, the Winter America, which is probably going to be one of those knockoff movies on Netflix about the same time that Captain America Winter Soldier comes out.
Jackass. Yeah, that one. Mr. Anyone says, I remember you predicting Now You See Me would be a sleeper hit this summer. How's it feel being right? It feels fantastic. I called it, said it was going to be a $100 million movie. Nobody believed me. Even Box Office Guru, which is where most major sites get their box office numbers, even
box
tweeted.
Box Office Mojo?
No, Guru. There's two different ones. Yeah, Guru is one. I prefer them. He basically said, "Who called that? Da 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 da." I'm like, "I did, bitch. Damn it, give me my props." Brian, we got one more.
All right, this is from one of our favorite listeners, D.A. Cheney. She says, thanks to @H_Outsider, episode 99, hashtag WWZ. I am going to check out the weekly podcast for hashtag Under the Dome at UTD Radio Podcast. Thanks, gentlemen.
And because we ran that promo last week for those guys, and she really liked the show. But we really want to make sure she listened to us first, them second.
Right.
But thanks for checking it out. We're glad that people are really liking that if they're a fan of the show. So we're glad that we could steer people that way. You can find us on thehollywoodoutsider.com, Twitter, @H_Outsider. Leave us a message or text us. You know, it would be great if you leave a voicemail saying whether you like the show or whether you hate Brian at 818-814-6426. Because, next week's our 100th episode. We're really
and if you're
pumped.
If you're in prison, you actually get preferential treatment.
That's true. But we don't want you to come visit us.
No visits. No personal visits.
No visits. Nothing personal. Listen and subscribe on iTunes for free. Listen on your Stitcher Radio app. Give us a thumbs up, please, if you do. Or through our RSS feed. And we actually made Stitcher Radio's top 100 entertainment shows. I forgot to mention that. So congratulations. That's thanks to all you guys, honestly. Because you're the one that gives us the thumbs up and listen. So we really appreciate that. As well as RockfordCollegeRadio.com, Thursdays from 4 to 6. Brian, how do you feel? Just the two of us. You feel
man,
a little...
this was awesome.
You like
it? I kind of like this, like I said, this crystal light version.
Because you never get interrupted.
This is true.
You get to say whatever you think.
Absolutely. I can even have that extra little room to ramble on the rare occasion.
You paused far less. I'm very impressed.
Well, thank you.
I really don't know.
It's taken me 2 years, but
I can't promise that this is any more entertaining.
Oh shit, no.
But hey, it's an episode.
It doesn't matter. We got the download at this point.
That's true. We appreciate it. Please come back. Don't give up on us yet. Next week, Justin and Scott will be back. We are going to have our 100th episode. We are really excited about it. If you guys have any ideas or stuff that you want to remember, let us know, and we will try to have it on the show. Feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. Just let us know what you liked. We've already had requests for Brian being drunk.
And that very well may happen. There is a good chance of that happening.
I can find the episode. You don't actually have to get drunk. I can just, recount it that way. The Dracula review. Oh, it's a Mario. Stallone review. And we're going to bring back Magic Mike. So we'll see how that goes. So any other ones you want to send our way, please do so. We will try to find them and put them on the show. Right now, we're going to have a couple of our favorite topics from this year that we've already done in past episodes. So take a listen. Thanks, guys. And remember, next time you go to a theater, what do, Brian?
Buy popcorn.
All right, let's go to From the Outside In. Our topic this week, we have two parts. So the first part was one of our listeners.
Hey, Ashley.
Hey, Ashley.
What's up?
She asked a question. What crime would the hoes commit on the day of the Purge? I must know. And for those that aren't aware, The Purge is a movie that's coming out at the end of May, I believe. And essentially the plot is America is crime-free now, and every year, the reason it's crime-free is they allow a 12-hour window on one day for 12 hours. You can commit any crime you want, and there's no punishment, there's no repercussions, nothing. That's what the Purge is.
Mad Max for 12 hours.
Mm-hmm. So she said, what would the hoes commit on the day of the Purge? Who wants to go first? Because I'm pretty sure surprise sex with Jennifer Lawrence is pretty horrible to say. But
I've talked before about, and I think I've talked about it on this show, but I've always wanted to do a heist. So I have to imagine that if I must commit a crime, and me being the good little boy that I am, I would never commit a crime. Mm-hmm. But if I had to, I would probably rob a bank.
Oh, that's on my list too.
I'd find me a bunch of badass dudes, and we would rob that bitch.
Would you get a president's mask? Because that's what I was going to do.
I don't know. I might just go with
Zuckerman. You wouldn't need a mask.
Oh, I'd still get one. Fuck it.
You have to wear the mask. I mean, it's the accoutrement. You got to have it.
And then I would just say, my name is Aaron. I'm here to rob your bank. You can find me. Here's my social security number. Fuck off.
And you can tweet me at @H_Outsider.
Yeah, @H_Outsider. Anything else, or is that the big one?
I would probably be tempted to head out to Beverly Hills and find some Kardashians, maybe find some other useless, absolutely useless people that are getting far too much fame for very little talent, and just go completely ballistic and blow them all to hell.
Wow.
Yeah, you'd find Kardashian ass from I think probably from Beverly Hills to San Francisco. There's enough of it.
I think you already can find that.
You can pretty good find all up and down the PCH there, huh?
What about you, Brian? What would you do?
Oh yeah, see, I would take notes all year. And basically, I would then stalk and hunt and track down like all sorts of people, and just murder the shit out of them. Starting with anybody who wears their pants just below their ass cheeks, anybody who blasts their stereo at inappropriate places like gas pumps or drive-throughs,
motorcycle fuckers revving their engine at the middle of the night,
right. Anybody who just excessively talks loud at movies.
Oh,
if you go ninja on their ass.
Yep. Cell phones, same thing. Hey, you got a quick little text message you got to check out. Fine. But to sit there and look at I've gone over that before. I'm not going down that road.
Done. You're done. That's what's going to make you make their cash their chips.
That's it. People who leave boogers on like the wall at the urinal. Oh. What is it about going to the bathroom that makes you do that? I just don't understand that. I don't know. Anyway, I've got about 45 more, but we don't have time for all that.
You'd be busy.
Yeah, I would have a busy 12 hours. I might need to rob a Punisher. I might need to rob a gas station to keep my car filled up.
Grab some snacks.
Wow. What about you, Aaron? What heinous crimes would you commit?
Well, I preface this with I would never do these things because they're deplorable. But I know I have specifically at least three people I would take out with a crossbow because I want that shit to hurt. Yeah, exactly. And I would do it slow. I would take like four arrows for each person. You know what I'm saying? They're going to remember this shit. I would rob the bank. That's another one. I want to do that. I'd grab Justin and Brian and find wasn't those church people Westboro?
Oh God, yes.
Oh yeah.
Oh, I'd remind them that I disagree with their beliefs for the explosives.
With like a Molotov cocktail.
Yeah. I'd picket those motherfuckers and then I'd stab them with their fucking picket signs. That's what I'd do, and then head to Washington and find all the corporate congressmen and hold a little private session. That's what I'd do.
Roast some lobbyists.
That's what I do. And then, surprise,
find those NRA lobbyists and find out how much they really like guns.
Oh, man. All right. Well, that's your answer, Ashley. I hope you aren't, you still want to listen to the show. So that's what's in our minds.
Remember, we would never do these things, really.
No, these are hypothetically. And, you know.
Right. In that movie of The Purge, this is what we would do.
Really? Well, here's what I think. Normally we spend our time with puppies and shit like that. I mean, you know, we help the homeless. We're always doing charity. So when they do have this, I think it's fair. I think we have it coming to us.
Balance it out.
Exactly. Now, let's go to our second topic, bad movies we love. This is one these guys really want to talk about. We aren't saying necessarily guilty pleasures because we all like what we like. We're saying movies we know are bad, but we still love them. Brian, what is a bad movie? You know it's bad. You know it's not good, and you still love it.
This is the main movie that came up to me quite a bit was Flash Gordon.
That's bad. Yeah.
I loved it as a kid. I don't have a good reason for it. Maybe just it played on TBS or something too many times. I just got brainwashed into it. I don't know. I just, for whatever reason, I love that movie. I will still watch it to this day. I love the soundtrack. It's stupid. It's cheesy. It's bad acting and horrible special effects. But there are certain people in that movie that I still, anything, even though I see them in other movies, they've gone on to other things. When I see them, I still relate them to Flash Gordon. So
Brian Blessed will forever be that Hawk guy.
Right.
Wow, that's a good pick. What about you, Justin? You got any?
Hell, Queen alone is enough to love that movie.
The soundtrack is pretty good.
I mean, I've got a fucking lengthy list of movies that I know are terrible, but I love them anyway. Howard the Duck. You know, nobody seems to like it, but my brother and I had a VHS copy of it when we were kids. We probably wore that thing out watching it and rewatching it. It's terrible, but I love it. Con Air is a pretty terrible film, but Nicolas Cage's mullet is enough to pull me in and keep me there. Last Action Hero, a terrible movie with just deplorable writing. But damn it if it's just not fun. I mean, it's Arnold, probably one of his last good performances. The Alien versus Predator movies, they're shit. Still like them. I don't know.
Really?
I don't know why. I'm just a fanboy of both those franchises.
Wow, that's ballsy.
I do like them. And, you know, here's one that I actually found on a website. And I was like, oh, shit, I haven't seen that in years. Stone Cold.
Oh, with Brian Bosworth.
Brian
fucking Bosworth. I remember that
one. I loved
that
movie when I was younger.
I think that's a great movie. I loved Hard Target. Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Mullet, too.
Oh, that was so good.
John Woo's first
Everything slow
film,
motion. I mean, he punches a snake. He punches a snake. Top that, Hollywood. He knocked the fuck out of a cobra. Oh, that's so good. I like Fire Down Below. It's a Steven Seagal movie. It's not great. It's not good. I love that movie. I have no idea why.
You could apply that to every Steven Seagal movie. It's not great.
That's true. But he's got a lot of really awful ones that aren't good. I really like that one. I have no idea why. I can't even give you a reason. Out for Justice is another Steven Seagal movie where I know it's not good. I mean, he has the worst New York accent or Jersey accent, wherever the hell he's from, Brooklyn. Awful. Awful. And he's trying to be dramatic, and he's awful.
Who was the woman in that from Weird Science?
No, that was Hard to Kill. Kelly LeBrock?
I'm sorry. I got the catalog of Seagal films mixed up. I apologize.
I will honestly say Hard to Kill is not a bad movie because it has one, my favorite movie line of all time, which is fuck you and die.
Is that the... Is that the one where, like, the opening scene, he throws the pimp through the windshield?
No, that's the convenience. It's hard to keep him straight, man. That was a convenience store. Hard to Kill was he opens in a convenience store.
I remember that.
It opened on Oscar night. Oh, God, it's sad that I remember that. Shit. Under Siege was a good Seagal movie. Sorry. Now we're going to talk about...
Erika Eleniak.
Oh, yeah. She comes out of that cake.
Woo!
Oh, my God. Best cake ever.
It made me hungry. Bad Moon is one that I love, and it's not a good movie at all.
Is that Mario Van Peebles?
No.
Because he did a movie, I think, that has Moon in the title, where it was about these werewolves that were actual. They were a police unit that was getting all kinds of awards because of their arrest records and shit, but they were actually all vampires.
I want to find that movie.
No,
though.
Not vampires. They were werewolves.
I want to find
And Mario that. Van Peebles became one. Shit, what was that movie called?
I don't know, but this is about a werewolf.
It's terrible, but it was actually kind of fun when I was a kid.
Well, My Bad Moon, it had Mariel Hemingway, Michael Paré, remember him?
Shit, Eddie and the Cruisers?
Yeah, Eddie and the Cruisers. And Mason Gamble, who played Dennis the Menace for, you know, he was popular for like a minute. But Michael Paré, he's like this... Is the Mariel Hemingway's brother gets bit by a werewolf and basically he turns into a werewolf slowly.
Yeah, I remember this now.
Well,
yeah,
it's
yeah.
Really, I love it because basically the movie's told from the fucking dog's point of view. That Mason Gamble has the dog, and it's the dog is the hero of the movie. And I just love that fucking movie because the dog saves everybody, and he's a real character. I've never seen a dog done as a character so well as I did in that shitty fucking werewolf movie.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. And Ford Fairlane.
Oh God, I was hoping I didn't know if you were going to mention it. I had it ready to go in case
it was mentioned on our Facebook, and we're going to name everybody's that they suggested as well. But Adventures of Ford Fairlane, it's always on my list. I realize it's an awful movie. I realize it's misogynistic. I realize the comedy is so dated. I don't fucking care, you know.
Oh, do the dishes.
Do my dishes. Oh, don't worry if you don't fall, I'll make it.
That's so funny.
It's just
zoot zoot pedals.
Oh, it's just one of those movies where it's so ridiculously awful and it's so quotable.
God, it's
at
terrible,
the same
so
time
good.
At the same time it's so good.
What was the song that Ed Bundy or whatever his name is?
Oh, Booty Time.
Booty Time. Booty Time.
Boot Cross Balls.
Booty time. Yeah. Oh, God. I've got to watch that again. Fuck, that better be on iTunes.
And the best part about that movie is he actually sings a song that's really good. Like, the song is really catchy. I got chicks to the left of me, chicks to the right of me, chicks all around me, but I ain't got you. Oh.
Tone Loke was in that?
Uh-huh.
He was, yeah. They had a lot of... They were positioning that. That was going to be Dice's big movie. And now he's doing Vegas. It didn't work out, but...
No. Oh, it's not on iTunes. God damn it.
I've got the DVD. You can find it on DVD. Oh, the movie, the Mario Van Poobies movie? Van Poobies? Mario Van Peebles movie? Brian found it. It's called Full Eclipse.
There you go.
Of the Heart? I don't know.
But... Oh, I've got it on DVD.
It was a TV movie.
Mm.
Was it?
Yeah.
Huh. Well, that explains some of the piss poor special effects and shit.
And you want to know a movie that's considered bad, but that almost all of us listening, I'm sure, love? Boondock Saints.
I've never seen it. I have it on Blu-ray and have yet to watch it.
Oh, shame on you.
Oh, my God.
I know.
Shepherds we shall be for thee.
But I have Ford Fairlane on DVD. I just saw it, so I know what I'm doing tonight.
Yeah, that one's not going to be on Blu-ray. I can almost promise it.
Justin, just so you know, Aaron is officially void of any jokes, any redneck, southern, hillbilly, gay, sheep-fucking, goat-fucking, cow-tipping jokes ever.
Why?
Why?
Because he's going man-packing in a place called the Porkies.
What's my favorite part is when he's like racing in the graveyard against like Robert Englund and like the naked chick flies up front.
Oh, yeah. Comes out of the coffin
yeah.
Or whatever.
Oh, I hope you fill out some organ donor cards. Oh,
yes. I've got to go watch this.
Now our From the Outside In topic. That'll be in 2 weeks. From the Outside In topic. Does your fan love, whether it be Star Wars, Lord of the Rings, Evil Dead, video games, whatever it is, does it hinder or hurt when you watch a property? For example, when The Hobbit came out, did you give it more or less criticism from the last film because you see it as a the property of a similar vein, Lord of the Rings, or you see something like Aragorn, do you compare it unfavorably because it doesn't live up to anything close to Lord of the Rings, that sort of thing? Let's talk about geek cred. Justin, you're the number one geek cred guy I can think of. I mean, you just squeed about the Wachowskis and how their series is going to be fantastic, and you haven't seen anything really about a description. Does that help or hinder when you watch a movie?
It really depends on how able someone is to remove themselves from expectation. We as geeks, I think one of the defining characteristics of a geek is passion. And a lot of times that passion is great, but it can also be a disservice because suddenly we expect more out of things, or we expect particular things out of a movie or a TV show. And when those things aren't given to us, it really pisses us off and causes us to hate it. And, you know, when the Lord of the Rings films were first being shot and people were learning about the things that weren't going to be in it, I mean, how many people bitched that Tom Bombadil and his whole arc wasn't going to be in the books, that those songs and whatnot weren't going to be in the books? Our passion can really do a lot of good and it can do a lot of bad. But if we can't step away from it and let something, you know, judge it for what it is and not for what it could have been or we think might have should have been, then it works against us.
Now, do you think you give it unfair praise when it's not warranted ever?
I think that my love of space opera and geekiness can cause me to enjoy things that maybe your more mainstream viewer wouldn't love. And so to them, I would be overpraising or overrating something. For example, Speed Racer. Most people thought that film was shit. They didn't like it. They didn't go back to it. I fucking loved it. And it's not because of the Wachowskis so much as it was the color palette and the zaniness and the fact that they took that cartoon, brought it into the real world, you know, quote unquote, and really made it work. And I never would have thought it would. And it was so fun. But I think a lot of that love comes from my ability to do that, to love something that a lot of people would just look at and go, Jesus Christ, is this an LSD trip caught on film or what?
And there's nothing wrong with that. If you like the film, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that, source material or not. Mm-mm. Who cares? I mean, I don't have to tell this to you, but who cares what anybody else thinks if you give it too much praise? If you enjoyed it, more power to you.
There's a lot of people that seem to harp down on geeks. I'll just say geek. We're all geeks. I mean, if you're listening to this podcast, you're a geek. If you're on this podcast, you're a geek. If you're Scott Clark, you're something special.
What?
but people harp on geeks because they love these things and they don't understand why they love, you know, Lord of the Rings, that's so childish or it's ridiculous or whatever they want to talk about. Star Wars, same thing. For me, it's horror films like Evil Dead. I'm not as much into the fantasy elements as you guys. Mm-hmm. But I don't understand why. I understand, I guess, because they don't get it, so therefore they don't understand it. But when you're a geek, if you really love something, like we've talked about Evil Dead and how much I adore it, you put Bruce Campbell in anything and I'll watch it and I'll probably give it more of a pass than anybody else would, even because he's been in mostly shit. 90% of what he's been in has been shit. Army of Darkness, not a great movie, and I still love it because of, you know, it's some of the geek qualities of it. I don't understand why people don't appreciate that, hey, it's just what you love. Just like these women with Twilight, it's no different than that. Brian, what were you going to say? I'm sorry.
I can separate myself, even if I'm a huge fan, especially I'll use the Avengers. As long as I can remember, I've always read comic books. I've always loved and collected comic books until I got to where like I had to pay bills and shit. So to finally see my, like one of my favorite comic books and hero teams on the big screen and done right, I was blown away. And I even, you know, it was one of those things to where I even separated myself as, okay, how good is this? I didn't need every detail from the Avengers on the big screen. I liked how they set everything up. It was just a very entertaining movie. And I just kind of look as my fandom being being able to enjoy it on a different level than your average viewer. Your average person wouldn't pick up on little things. So at the beginning of the movie, you see Stark Tower and it's the big A is shaped in the Avenger, in the Avenger A, like you, the A is on the comic books. I picked up on that, kind of saw it, kind of foreshadowed something, you know, like happens later on in the movie. So it helps me appreciate a movie more, but really I can kind of, because I know that, that a movie has a, they've got to hit a certain criteria that the books don't. So I can actually pull myself away from that and watch it a little bit more objectively. So,
but wait a minute. Is it fair to say that about the Avengers, a movie that made over $1 billion, that you had, that you like that movie? You know what I'm saying? I don't say that. I'm not saying that you're wrong, that we like that movie, but give an example from my perspective. As you alluded to earlier, I'm the biggest video game geek here. And I'm from of the mindset of people that video game culture doesn't have a solid AAA made a good amount of money.
Film.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you got Resident Evil, you got your Silent Hills, but they did okay. Mm-hmm. I have nothing like that, but I can still enjoy those movies and separate that and watch those independently, and neither one's going to ruin the other experience. Granted, mostly I don't like a lot of the films that way. And I found that, especially since I've gotten involved with you guys in the podcast, that kind of thing, I watch a lot more movies in the last couple of years than I have in my entire life, obviously.
It's because you were grounded, apparently.
But, yes, grounded. So, me personally, it does affect me, because I'm gonna be more apt to go see something because of the source material. But I think I've gotten to the habit where I can separate it. I think the true test for me will be like the summer, not to stir up controversy here, but Ender's Game is a book that I have read over 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. That I didn't grow up reading Lord of the Rings and stuff like you guys did. And when I see a film adaptation of a book that I read that long ago, and I finally see it to film, that's going to be the true test for me to see, you know, am I going to enjoy it even though it's not 100% true to the book, that kind of thing. So I'm looking forward
that's
to
understandable.
That.
Understandable. And I think I can separate it too. I'm more of an actor akin. Like if Kurt Russell's in it, I'm probably blind to a lot of shit. Mm-hmm. Bruce Campbell's in it, I'm blind to a lot of shit. But movies themselves, like we went and saw Die Hard. Brian and I went and saw Die Hard. Even though I love that franchise, one of my favorite franchises, mm-hmm. I can discount that movie pretty quickly because I thought it was a shoddy movie. And I don't think you have to be blind to something to still enjoy the property it's based on. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, there are times where I think some of the geeks in the world, Harry Knowles is one where I think he does this quite a bit. It's Ain't It Cool News, where he doesn't separate himself from his love of things. Like if he loves something, even if the movie is just passable, he raves about it. You know, and I'm not knocking him. I mean, that's his taste and more power to him for enjoying it. But that's definitely not my wheelhouse. If a movie is generally bad, I can at least admit, you know, it's not a great movie, but so-and-so's great about it. I'm great to see that property brought to life. But a lot of geeks can't do that.
If a person qualifies it as saying, you know what, I am an irrational fan of this movie. Mm-hmm. Because I love whatever the property was that it's based on, video games, comic books, a previous movie or TV show, whatever the case is. If they say, you know what, I absolutely love this property, and I'm telling you that before I give you this review, then I'm fine with that.
Yeah, and the name for that's fanboy. Mm-hmm. And right. A lot of people used to use that as a derogatory kind of label to say, well, then, you know, you obviously have no rational ability to discuss this biased. But I take ownership of my fanboyism. I have never shied away from my love of the Star Wars films and my appreciation for Lucas and what he created. Hell, even though the prequels, there are things that I can find to love about them. Even in The Phantom Menace, there's a couple of things worth loving. So I don't hide from my biases. I don't disguise them. I don't believe in the idea, though, also of guilty pleasures. I don't feel guilty about shit. I like what I like, and if you don't like it, that's on you. But whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, if I enjoy it, I enjoy it, and I'm not going to sit here and equivocate on why I should or shouldn't. I just do. Fanboys are people who do that. And I – fuck it. Fanboys unite.
I want to share with you guys something that I actually read in the past couple months, and you guys probably have seen it.
Oh, I thought you were going to give us all some deep secret.
No,
It's like, okay. Finally.
Finally.
Let me unload myself on you guys.
That closet is free. Equal symbol for Scott. Equal symbol for Scott.
Oh, my God. No. You guys, and you guys here have probably seen it, but there's a quote that's been attributed to Simon Pegg all over the internet about geekdom. And I always thought it was really cool. And he says, being a geek is all about being honest about what you enjoy and not being afraid to demonstrate that affection. It means never having to play it cool about how much you like something. It's basically a license to proudly emote on a somewhat childish level rather than behave like a supposed adult. Being a geek is extremely liberating. I love that. And that's exactly what it's all about. There's nothing wrong with being a geek. It's about being what you love. And if we can separate that between the movies, even if you can't, who cares? If you like a movie because it has a nostalgia factor, it makes you think about how it was to be a kid, all more power to you.
What I don't get are the people that just have anger about it. Like, you love something, obviously you can't separate it for whatever reason. Spider-Man's that way for me. It's really hard to make me say negative things about Spider-Man because I love Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. But people that, for whatever reason, they have to hate on you for that because you're so much into whatever that culture is. You're into Battlestar Galactica. It's changed a little bit over the course of the last 10 years or so. Probably Big Bang Theory is the most to thank for that.
Yeah, right.
But there's still a lot of people that just rip on you for loving geek shit. And I still don't understand why that hasn't changed.
The greatest
it has
form
changed.
Of,
I mean,
I think it's almost the opposite. I think it's almost it's cool to be geek. It's cool to be a fanboy of just about anything.
I agree with Brian. When I was a kid, and of course now I'm going to sound crusty and old, and you know, get off my lawn and pull up your pants. But you know, back when I was a youngster in school, I was a huge reader, and you would always find me with a book in my hand, and I got no end of shit about carrying books around, and people kind of looked down on me and made jokes about it. I played Dungeons and Dragons, and Jesus, living in Texas, I got, again, no end of shit about that. And I was into video games, and I was into Star Wars. So I, you know, luckily, because my dad was in the military, I got to move around and meet a lot of people who shared a lot of the loves that I did. But whenever I had to move back to the South while my dad was in between where he was being transferred off to, I lived in a small Texas town and had to eat shit for a lot of the stuff. What's interesting now, though, is a lot of those people that I went to school with that would have given me shit, you know, now I know them on Facebook and rekindled some friendships, and they couldn't be happier that the dream that I set out for myself to be a writer is coming true. And a lot of them are reading the books that I read. And geek culture, that used to be something that was kind of, you were ashamed of it, is almost, I would have to say, almost mainstream. Every big budget film, or most of the films that make the big money are geek movies. Whether it's a comic book or a fantasy, those things are geek culture. Those things are on the rise. Brian's right. Almost, if you're not a geek, you're the outsider.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. I wasn't speaking more to the mainstream. I was speaking more to those people that still have to put you down for loving those things.
Yeah, fuck them. Yeah. Come see me. I'll kick them in the butt.
Now, what do you guys think? Does that ever hinder when you go see a movie? Like, say it has a similar plot to The Matrix, for speaking to you, Justin, or to Lord of the Rings or something. Does that detract you from enjoying the movie because you're like, oh, fucking Jackson did it better, or the Wachowskis do it better?
No, really the only time my geekiness has worked against me in a film, and we talked about it earlier, though I didn't say anything then because I knew this was coming up. Independence Day, and we made jokes about the whole Mac thing. Mm-hmm. That, if for some reason, even though I was accepting of everything up until that moment, as soon as he opened that Mac laptop and was able to establish a Wi-Fi connection with that alien ship, something in my head broke.
Above the earth.
Like, from that moment on, I was like, fuck this movie. And I don't know why. I understand. I am accepting interstellar aliens and their ability to cross light years and force fields.
The White House no longer exists.
Yeah, I accept all this, but damn it.
I know you ain't getting a Wi-Fi connection.
I know you're not establishing an HTTP connection with that alien ship that does not have HTTP on it. And then you're uploading a virus?
Wasn't he uploading it manually?
Yeah, he was. He had a router. He had a router on board too.
No, I'm sorry. There was just something about that my mind says it. No, no.
That ship was connected to the mothership. You know that, right?
It was. Yeah, he was in the mothership. That's why he connected. Just be in there. It's technology.
It's that it's that IT geek in me that for some reason just couldn't accept it. And so it kind of worked against me. I loved Earth and everything else, but that one thing has always just kind of stuck up in my gums like a fucking piece of gristle that just won't go away and prohibits me from just unfettered love of that film.
Of all the things.
I know. Trust me.
God, let the pros stick to the jokes, will you?
Let us do what you have us on here to do.
Right. Let us do what we get paid for.
Or not.
He smelled the rust.
Sandow, the intellectual savior of the masses.
Who knows that? That's above 15.
My kids at school.
Okay.
They're not above 15.
That's kind of what
I work with 10-year-olds all day long. Speaking of.
10-year-olds? Hang on. Let me take my pants off. Is it a private school?
No, it's a public school. Every year, our fifth graders, towards the end of the year, have a...
pregnancy test thing?
No.
Well, look at you knowing your Bible verses. It's pretty good for a segregated town.
And even liked it at a certain point, unlike Satan over there. And I don't mean Justin.
So I was about to say, what did I do?
This is the Hollywood Outsider.
Some fucked up shit.